So this is Dew Line. Dew Line number, volume 1, number 12, June 1969. And it features ads in the form of slides. So we did, Are You Taking a Job Away from a Machine? That was the last one we did. I think that was the seventh slide. It says, in the slide, in brackets, Air India. So it's the National Airlines of India. The headline at the top says, we'll get you to the Taj Mahal on time? Question mark. We'll get you to the Taj Mahal on time? Then in smaller print it says, London Bridge is not falling down, as you can see. Why should Air India choose London Bridge as a symbol of their service environment? So in the ad, which we can't see, it has London Bridge. So McLuhan writes, with such service environments and speed as the jet affords, the whole world becomes a large city of circulating inhabitants, dash, the herb orbs. And he's quoting approximately a phrase from Finnegan's Wake, I think. The herb, it orbs. The urban, it orbits. As the world becomes a circulating city, it also becomes a teaching machine. Every part of the globe is now available to every human being as an educational instrument. Every country becomes a suburb, if not a central part of the global core city in quotes. What used to be the country is now little more than a corner park, in effect. So this is McLuhan moving out of the term global village. He's already used the term global theater in earlier issues of the Dew Line. Now he's talking about a global core city. After 138 years over the Thames, London Bridge is coming down, dash, to the Arizona desert, in brackets, from city to suburban sandlot. Having been junked, it revives as an art object, a museum piece, and the rest of the globe likewise. With global transportation and communications, the globe goes from archaeological dump to museum. The whole globe becomes a museum. Even the Queen Mary, that's a big cruise ship, even the Queen Mary has become a sort of motel. Evidently, the only admission fee to any gallery of the Global Museum thus far is the airfare. So that's the end of that one. Then slide 9 has something called McClouth, or McClouth. M-C, capital L-O-U-T-H. I don't know what that is. So the title is Yellow Submarine or Rube Goldberg. So Yellow Submarine had just come out a few months earlier, came out in 68, and this is June 69. Yellow Submarine or Rube Goldberg? So it says, Rube Goldberg's concoctions were reminders of how humans, no, Rube Goldberg's concoctions were reminders of how human ingenuity could outwit itself and create solutions to problems that created far more problems than solutions. This is a simple aspect of all human ingenuity. Every new service environment creates a huge wealth of disservice at the same time. The Yellow Submarine of the Beatles was their idea of the garbage machine or disposal unit. The Beatles, a very creative group, understand garbage thoroughly. In fact, they use little else in their operation. The old sounds, old rhythms, old tunes suitably archetypalized by new electronics. They use these contrived units or submarines to submerge into and explore the depths of the cultural unconscious, retrieving all sorts of strange fruit. It's like an, quote, inner space capsule, unquote, a completely contrived and programmed human environment for retrieving the junked past as art. T.S. Eliot says, quote, these fragments I have shored against my ruin, unquote, then dash, fragments he had pulled from the heap of all the greatest art in the world, from Homer to the present. For the painter, it is the unswept street, the abandoned breakfast table that reveals the order. The reason that an artist finds trash and garbage fascinating is that it records the lines of force in a community, the actual modes of operation of a community. It contains an order. When people arrange everything for one effect only, visual effect, most of the lines of force and life in the community are omitted. But in junk, in garbage, you find all the purposes simultaneously superimposed upon one another. In brackets, this, for example, is with Joyce's Wake. This, for example, is why Joyce's Wake uses language with its endless overlays and decay and distressed antique visions and versions. End of bracket. Bracketed quote. Then, as with the new globe-girdling environments, the world itself becomes garbage, a museum of archetypes. Simultaneously, all the people on the planet are thrust into roles of creativity. Read that again. As with the new globe-girdling environments, the world itself becomes garbage, a museum of archetypes. Simultaneously, all the people. So, as the world itself becomes garbage or a museum of archetypes, that's what he's saying. As with the new globe-girdling environments, the world itself becomes garbage, a museum of archetypes. Simultaneously, all the people on the planet are thrust into roles of creativity. Everybody has to adopt the modality of an artist, confronting a new strange environment and trying to figure out patterns in it, I guess you'd say, that you could match or create a new identity from. So then slide 10, the company is International Paper. The headline on the right side of the page, it says disposable environment. And then it says, is something backwards here? The many feces of man, as soon as it has content, it has outlived its uselessness. So McLuhan writes, the title, I don't know if I said the title, is Disposable Environment. Clothing, of course, is a total environment as far as the human body is concerned. One of its first main uses was the transportation of fire. With the further innovation of architecture, clothing became archetypal, became art. Fashion was born and became a cultural mask. In the present time, with the formation, in brackets, by effect, of a global theater, clothing assumes a new function as ritual costume. In The Mechanical Bride, that's McLuhan's first book. In The Mechanical Bride, it was explained how, when glamour is separated off from all other human characteristics, mechanism results. The same principle of fragmentation and visual high definition, when applied to nudity, creates pornography. So note that, the fragmentation. Then it says in bigger print, education is warfare, psychic and social. Then in smaller print, the International Paper Company has here launched a massive education program, they're referring to the ad. They express their intent to reprogram every facet of daily existence, everything from furniture and houses, perhaps cities, to a baby's bottom. Their own, quote, materials revolution, unquote, promises to speed up the aging of hardware to the point of achieving instant obsolescence. This not only seals the doom of hardware as such, but may surpass the garbage apocalypse mentioned earlier. Read that again. Their own materials revolution promises to speed up the aging of hardware to the point of achieving instant obsolescence. This not only seals the doom of hardware as such, but may surpass the garbage apocalypse mentioned earlier. Such extensive reprogramming of our relation to our world and to each other inevitably means a total cultural reorientation. A proud set of images is presented. That's just like a novelistic statement right in the middle of this commentary. A proud set of images is presented. Then, Hertz's law, : the consequence of the images will be the image of the consequences. Parts of the latter, in this case, include shifting our economy away from hardware and changing our entire private and corporate identity patterns. Of course, these boys are a little late. Other media than paper have already done much of the job. This is, however, a nice case in point of Joyce's, quote, willed without witting, world without aimed, unquote. And that's spelled W-I-L-L-E-D. Without witting, W-I-T-T-I-N-G, world without witting, world, W-H-O-R-L-E-D, without aimed, world without aim. So There was the invitation, willed without witting, world without aimed. So that is the end of the ads, the 10 ads. Now we go back to the introduction. I think I read this essay. There was an introductory essay. Yeah, we read that. So, I'm unmuting now.
All participants are now unmuted.
Any responses?
Yes, related to what Diane says, that things uses you. And I was thinking how clothing is like a first layer of engagement with the environment.
Right.
And how maybe we're not really wearing this clothing.
It's wearing us.
Yes, because what we think is our personality reflected, for example, in style or in a fashion.
Inflection.
It has fashion in a trend. It's not only a piece of clothing. It's much more than just the clothing, what we are communicating with the clothes and with the things we're putting on or using as technology.
Yeah, clothing is weaponry. That's what McLuhan says in War and Peace in the Global Village. Clothing is weaponry. That's Thunder 2 of Finnegan's Wake.
Yes, and we're actually wearing the whole environment, not only the clothes, but everything we engage with is part of this masquerade or dressing up.
Or persona.
Your whole environment is...
Your mask.
Is your clothing, actually.
Yeah.
And another thing I was thinking of is once I met John Chowning, he invented FM synthesis. And I was telling...
What did he invent?
FM synthesis.
At the clothing store?
No, it's a type of sound.
Oh, okay.
Synthesis with frequency modulation. And it became very famous with the Yamaha synthesizers in the 80s. And he was in Mexico in a festival of computer music, and I was telling him, oh, technology is going so fast, blah, blah. And he said, no, it actually goes, as McLuhan is saying, when the equipment is out, it's already obsolete, and they actually have much more technology, but in order for you to buy it, they make like an innovation every 6 months instead of doing everything at once, everything that is already there, because they want you to buy the new one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually not going that fast, but actually going slower than the state of the in which the technology could be.
Right.
They're just making you consume and buy the innovation, which is not really new.
No, that's a good point. I've seen that said other places. The stacking up of used cars in the automobile business, the backlog of distribution, that's what you're talking about, that kind of issue?
Well, there is much more technology that what we think is the newest, the avant-garde.
Right.
Like you have confusion. But
yeah.
A lot of these new technologies are not out in the world, because there are also like different interests, and they when something is supposed to be new, they're actually already obsolete. There's something better than that, but they're not putting it out.
So that's a slowing down, what you're talking about.
Yes, we think technology or all these products are being innovated very fast, but they're actually slowing it down so that we buy.
Yeah, they're spreading it out so we spend a lot in each phase. And they
And McLuhan is already seeing that this instant obsolescence of equipment we think is the newest, but it's already obsolete, and after 6 months there is something much, 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 much better with much, much memory, for example, in computers or faster chips.
But it won't show up?
No, although it may already be there, they will sell it after 6 months so that you want to buy the new one.
Right. So what's your point here, besides the slowing down?
Yeah, what we think is the avant-garde of technology. It's obsolete when it's appearing.
When it's appearing, I see.
In the market.
Right.
It's already obsolete.
So you've got whatever this Italian guy who's got some kind of cold fusion battery, and he's drumming up a lot of publicity the last couple of years. So let's say he gets a grant to continue on his research after he makes a demonstration. But IONDUM is here with the stuff, so that's what you're saying. You got this mainstream cold fusion, you know, puny devices, and that's what's considered the state of the art. And they're not pointing out what is actually here.
Yes. There has always been much more innovation and technology than what the mainstream public knows about.
Could you give me some examples?
In every aspect of technology. Mm-hmm. For example, the army had before everybody many things, like, for example, the internet.
Right.
And many other things in everything. And it may take years before people have it and they think it's the newest.
Mm. Well, there was the joke, I've said it before, in cliched archetype, the guy comes into the antique shop and says, "What's new?" And the guy says, "It isn't out yet."
Mm-hmm. In fashion, it's always also like that. The trends people think are the newest thing, it takes like 2 years from the conception of the programming. And then they think they want to, yeah, maybe these elite groups in England, in London, they think what they want to program in the environment, and then this goes out to program the environment in many ways, like in fashion. But the whole process starts much more. Like 2 years before it's on the market.
Right.
And then you have the fabrics, and then you have the actual trends. What they tell you is the new trend.
Right. Now, we've heard through the last few do lines the theme that we're in a garbage apocalypse.
Yeah.
And the garbage is retrieved as old cliche and becomes a new archetype. That's probably one of the main ideas that McLuhan ran with from a few years after this publishing of Understanding Media in 1964. So he's really on about the garbage apocalypse.
Yeah.
Using that word, and he said he was an apocalyptic. But what was it? I'm neither optimist or pessimist. I'm an apocalyptic. In other words, he knows change is going to be demanded of people. Some kind of influence, spiritual crisis, is going to come to everybody.
Well, I think
he's emphasizing
spiritual
garbage a lot more, and he said garbage is superimposed upon one another. The world itself becomes garbage.
Yes, so the junk, the museum. And then the key to the creative process, Yeats says, is I lie down in the rag and bone shop of my heart and begin to climb the ladder again. So the key to the, you know, there's that famous phrase, ontogeny replays phylogeny. So the growth of the individual is a replay of the growth of the species. So in this case, the individual garbage is one thing, has personal meanings, but the collective garbage is the cognitive process of stages of apprehension for the rest of the world, not North America or Britain.
Yes, and what I think is this spiritual crisis or financial breakdown and all these things that are being talked about is just not adapting to the frequency. These old systems not moving to the frequency, to what is not spiritual.
Well, Ion says that people are adapting, but they don't know it. And they do it by default. And Ion wants people to become aware of what's happening. But so people are being forced to feel an emptiness, an inadequacy that they have to solve by finding another activity. The restlessness in the world is responding to that environment, the new environment.
Yeah, because everything in the environment is changing. Oxygen, fire.
The Pope. The Popes are changing.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Bob, in the Yellow Submarine, number 9, I heard, I didn't hear the last part, but it was every new service environment creates a sub-environment, or could you go back to that?
Yeah, I think that was it. Let's see, where is that? Was it number 9, you think?
Yes, it was number 9, the Yellow Submarine.
Well, what was the idea? I don't see it here.
Every new service environment creates, I believe it said sub-environment.
Oh, right. Rube Goldberg's concoctions were reminders of how human ingenuity could outwit itself and create solutions to problems that created far more problems than solutions. This is a simple aspect of all human ingenuity. Every new service environment creates a huge wealth of disservice at the same time.
Okay, huge wealth. Okay, yeah. That's the first time I've heard. I mean, I've heard and read McLuhan talking about service environment, how the electrical environment created a whole new service environment, but that's pretty unique. That's the first time I've heard it about a huge wealth of
disservice.
What was it? Disservice, yes.
Because, you know, I said last week that stupidity creates wealth. Stupidity is the older environment. So the internet has, you know, every old environment retrieved and running around trying to get a few bucks. That's the older media are what people now recognize because they can't see the present. So they buy stuff, and there's fads and new developments in the older media in the rearview mirror. And so wealth is created out of that blindness.
Yes.
I also, when you said that, I also took it as people who are stupid, they seem to attract wealth more. So I was thinking, is that because they have the mind out of the way more than...
Yes. So you have, this is a simple aspect of all human ingenuity. Every new service environment creates a huge wealth of disservice at the same time. Every new service environment creates a wealth of disservice. Now, what did you just say, Eliza? What was the idea?
I heard it as people who are stupid, they create wealth faster in their life.
Well, they call
they have the mind out of the way.
Yeah. Yeah, and the non-ionic way is seeing people being disgusted with the new services and then falling back on the old comforting media. That's tourism. So the world becomes a museum, and people go around, what's the word, passionately obsessing, OCDing about ridiculous historical cultures. Like I see this every day coming home from the beach. The luaus are on, and they're doing these Hawaiian dances and Hawaiian music. Though I found out the other day, this particular one I pass is Samoan. But it's very irritating to me to hear the same music every day. And so I sort of feel sorry for the young women and guys that do the dancing and the prancing and twirling about. They pretty well got to do the same thing every day. Now, tribal people, ritual people, don't mind repeating something. But me being slightly visually oriented, find ritual repetition irritating. So they're singing and dancing, and they're in a bind. A friend of mine who's been here since 69 said he hates the whole area that I walk through, all the hotel resorts. And he also is an eco-fascist, so he probably doesn't like the pollution, but he doesn't like the monoculture of the Hawaiians replaying their same themes and music and this ritual they present of their history. These guys are forced to limit themselves to the Hawaiian music in their job. And the people who come, the tourists, they expect this display, spectacle of rearview mirror. So the Hawaiians are stuck here with no way to have a creative presentation of their history.
Well,
so they're stuck with cliches.
They've limited themselves to that because, they're entertaining. They're entertaining tourists with their culture, that they can make it creative, but they continue to do the same thing over and over again.
Yeah. I don't know. You got something to say, Roxy? I forgot what I was going to say.
Well, it's very interesting what you're saying about people being forced to recreate these cliches, because I also see that in Mexico.
Yes.
That is what the tourists want to consume. So, and also, for example, here in Germany, they may be interested in those type of cliches, like, oh, yes, Frida Kahlo, and things that for them are Mexican, but the most really contemporary, most experimental may not be that interesting, even for people that are academics or artists. They also go to the cliché.
They what?
And there's a lot. They also go to the cliché.
Right.
To the archetypes, and there is much more happening because, for example, what people experience in a mega big city like Mexico City goes beyond what is happening here in Berlin. Berlin is like a small town for me.
Yes. Okay. Well, he says here at the end of slide 9. As with the new globe-girdling environments, the world itself becomes garbage, a museum of archetypes. Simultaneously, all the people on the planet are thrust into roles of creativity. Well, some of them are doing the creative cliches for the tourists. Others, who may not have regular jobs, which are slower environments, the job environments, you're working with corporations that aren't going to make any drastic, rapid changes. So it's a slower world, whereas those that don't have jobs and are living by, you know, their wits, they're doing another kind of creativity, whatever it is, fringe presentations. So you got several kinds of creativity, and that's the content of a end of humanity scenario where the machines, the endoramine, replaces the chemical body. So all this internet imagery is the chemical body seeing its life flash before its eyes as it succumbs to its obsolescence and removal.
As so you had.
I'll just add this point. So the sunburst, Minerva's owl has fled. So they say, you know, the sun is very beautiful, and stars, when they die, they create a beautiful thing. So all this creativity that's been spread about in the 20th century, from skillful, crafted sophisticates to street-level hustling, that is the roles of creativity that everybody was forced to be in as ending of some familiar chemical body environment.
Yes, I would
assumed.
Like just to say something.
Yeah.
There is a documentary of Berlin after the wall fell down in the 80s. It's called B Movie.
Yeah.
And they're showing all these alternative cultures. And one of the leaders of the band of Einstürzende the Neubauten. That's like falling buildings,
mm-hmm.
new buildings. He said something which I think is the perfect definition of the here comes everybody. He said in Berlin at that time, everybody was a genius dilettante.
Hmm. Who said this?
The singer of that band called Einstürzende Neubauten.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I've heard of them. So people are thrust into roles of creativity. We are, if you move outside of the museums, and just as, you know, language was the main creative art form of everybody, you have this hyper versions of language and media, and the audience making of it becomes more obvious. So we can see the wealth-making idea and how, quote, stupidly, it is recycling old cliches. But the present is so threatening to people that they need the comfort of the older arts. So everybody is forced to be an individual on guard and not knowing whether their security will continue. So they have
yes.
to be, what'd you say?
That makes sense. They don't want to live in the present, so they keep reverting back to the past. And they weren't
right.
Live in the past.
There's this video someone sent to me of Trump in a recent speech, and this woman comes up out of the audience, and she's actually very silly and celebrating Trump. Maybe I'll play it. And it's an example of someone engaging in the electoral tribal ritual with no perspective in the literate informed sense. Remember, Jefferson, those guys would say things like, you know, you don't have a democracy unless you have an informed electorate. But they were sticking with the parameters of electricity, parameters of pre-electricity. So this thing about everybody becoming creative, that's what I mean by wealth. Stupidity creates wealth. And then the high culture provides a ersatz, an environment to that. And they write critical, visually biased, detached statements, novels and that are reflecting the disdain that the whole population is now involved with creating things. That's what's called the Bauhaus vision. These German artists that wanted to, you know, communize creativity. Well, it's happening now. And not many people are pointing that out. that the visions of these art philosophers 15, 20 years ago have been realized. You want the population to be creative? Well, everybody's being creative in ways of survival. So you have people who, like the janitors at, say, the Eaton Center in Toronto, and then they have a film festival, famous Toronto Film Festival, and they're around picking up garbage, but they get to see a lot of the new sophisticated films, and maybe some of them, these janitors are college students and aware more than the old janitor function. So you really can't categorize people anymore on these old, limited, slower commerce versus non-commerce. And the whole process of confusion is creating wealth,
wow, that's
which
so
some
true.
People call pollution. What did you say?
So that's so true. You can't really categorize people at all. People usually have a tendency to do that, but you can't.
Well, you don't know who people are. And just because someone's a janitor doesn't mean they haven't got a PhD or something.
Mm-hmm. And he also said, as soon as it has content, it has outlived its usefulness.
Yep. What do you think that means?
Is that the same as saying it's become obsolete?
Yes. Usefulness would be when it's new and a novelty and striking. But then once everybody gets used to it, as a newer environment supersedes what just was new, you get that stultified situation that creates a lot of wealth. You know, McLuhan's here using the word circulation. That's a word Croker uses a lot. People are just circulating around the globe, on the move. With such service environments and speed as the jet affords, the whole world becomes a large city of a circulating inhabitants, the herb orbs. So, and then mm-hmm. as the world becomes a circulating city, it also becomes a teaching machine. That's your programming. You have to think of the language at the time that McLuhan's writing this. People aren't thinking of garbage environments as media or media as garbage environments. The ecology movement comes in with a division between nature and technology. That's a big mistake. So the ecologists... What?
Oh, the ecologists?
Yeah. So then so they try to get various legislation, and they usually complain about what did get legislated. But they create distraction, which is a kind of wealth. There are people spend time reading these guys' papers, going to the conferences and bemoaning the increasing pollution everywhere. The terms, so McLuhan's coming very radically, switching the marker points, the terms of ecology, saying that we have the solutions here to modulate the environments. We don't have to do research into whether there is pollution or not. So then everybody ignored McLuhan. And then when the internet came in and there was a celebration of McLuhan, a crumb placed in everybody's past, then he was super, super entertaining. And probably if I spoke to her in a couple of weeks, she's probably still sober from the Zappa footage that she was looking at.
I was thinking, as well as there is this body without no organs, there is also the magnetic city and the interzone, this virtual space everybody's engaging, and it's like you're not only in one city. I'm as much here in Berlin as I am in Mexico City.
Yes.
Because I'm engaging a lot of people there, and I know what they're doing, and I do things there, and and most of the things are done with files that you sent. And you may send them here to somebody, but you can also send them there. And
well, they, how about this, Roxy? They are not in Mexico. You're not in Berlin. You guys are in the chip membrane, this exchanging of files. Everybody is ruptured out of their chemical habitats and engaging one space, the global membrane, which is this, you know, what is it? This Google, this...
The interzone.
The interzone, right. The interzone. And I'm thinking of interzone like McLuhan reviewed Burroughs, but he didn't talk about the Burroughs' later books. He did have one on his desk and was reading it at the time he died or had the stroke and then was out of action for a year. But I'd say my whole agenda in CKLN was to take the images that everybody thought they were using in their rebellions or their revolutions or their conservatism, whatever their movement was, and show how they had no sense of what actually was happening and what environment they're in. And therefore, they were not outraged that the Toronto Star kept announcing itself as the Toronto Star. I mean, that's not a fact anymore. Where is Toronto? Where does it begin? Where does it end? You've got bureaucracies, tax bureaucracies, but they are run by, well, more and more it seems, crooks, and who are using the money for other purposes. So the role of babysitting the citizens is not carried out very properly. Or effectively.
But that's what you were saying with the orbs. Is
yes,
the Pope,
the herb orbs.
The message to the world of the Pope in Easter is called Urbis and Urbis and Orbis, something like that, which is like the city and the world.
Which yeah, what are you
like
quoting?
He's addressing the the joys makes upon of the Pope message to the world.
Right. Yes.
Urbis et Orbis, which is like he's addressing the world, the whole planet, with his message in Easter. And this is, in a way, this international planetary city, the Orbs, that Joyce was talking about.
Right.
That we are all in this orb.
Yeah, the
orb.
The herb orbs, the old hardware environments, they move fast around the world. But you, in your digital body, do not move. You just receive ESP, receive materials that you have no idea how they got there. So you might as well call them cloned ESP, as I do in my older essay.
Yes, but before, only people like the Pope will have the power to broadcast. Now everybody's
right.
Doing their Orbis. And
they are TV stations. They're TV stations.
Orbis.
Every individual is pretty well a TV station because they can broadcast all kinds of regular content like any station.
Yeah, they have their own channels.
Yeah. So they're broadcasting. Who ever thought that everybody would have the potential to be their own broadcaster and attract attention? So, you know, people aren't necessarily watching TV much. They might have it on and they watch one or two things, but there's actually not that many people watching a popular show compared to the 50 years ago. But you can have a video with 13 million clicks.
Yeah, Ian said that people are not watching TV as much as they're watching YouTube videos.
Yeah. So, you see, that's the problem with art education, is they don't discuss the larger environmental complexities. And then the kids just end up being artists as a graduate of a fine art school and start making some art and hope that some moneyed people find it. And so that's, in a way, that's why the art community is very nervous and very stiff. at least when they talk about themselves, they're very careful what they say. After the symposium's over, they go out and party and do their coke, and they might get a little more wild, but...
Why is it that they're stiff, Bob?
Big pardon? The
reason that, why are they stiff when they're talking about themselves? Or is it just they're aware that it's really no longer useful?
They're stiff in their jobs. They're on show. The job is useless, but they must show seriousness in there. So there's an insecurity. So that makes them over rigid and don't want to get their hands dirty. They don't want to deal with the bum that's down on the first floor trying to go to the bathroom or something. The stiffness of corporate life is putting on a ritual. It's almost like some slow sacred ritual in some Samoan tribes culture. Anthropologists would run across these kind of phenomena all the time. Well, the way government, you see this in TV shows like The Good Wife, House of Cards, all the ones about politicians and their handlers, they get really worried about their image. So a lot of work goes into making the image of the celebrity politician. So the seriousness is they take their surface rituals, the only way they can get money, and act out like it's a ritual. So there's where the seriousness comes in.
Yeah, and they really distract themselves and pretend they're really occupied with that so they can get more grants and funds.
And you don't do that yourself?
That's what we do.
We have found the central scrutinizer, the one who's doing this paperwork.
So I have a question.
We're putting you on the spot for a minute.
No, you're not.
I'm not. Look at that.
I have a better topic to move on to.
But no, look, it's interesting. You do have a lot of experience of this dilemma of immigrant culture and coming to America and engaging in the what we call the second world bureaucracies, not the first world corporations.
I find it frustrating because I feel like our meetings are pointless, our gatherings, there's not useful at all. Everything's so pointless. Everyone's keeping themselves busy, and it's so important what they have to do. And
because it's limited budget. You just can't get any real wealth money coming in to loosen you up, right, to make you do things. So under austerity conditions, you have this pressure on you. By the way, someone told me the other day they're taking the drops, RNA drops, and the pressure became normal, something like 120 over 80. And they have not had a normal blood pressure in 20 years. They start taking the drops, and now it's pretty quickly normal. That was a nice testimony from someone yesterday, to me personally.
Mm.
That's pretty good,
wow.
Eh? They have a serious blood pressure problem, and it just goes away just like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, back to this thing. So the interplay of cultures and faces and imagery, this is, I say it 100 times, this is why the collage and clash of languages and media dynamics is the right way to describe and paint our world today, and that's what Finnegan's Wake does. I mean, just thinking about the wake, it can be an inspiriting vision, contemplating about its relationship to where we've come to without worrying about what the particular stories are in the wake. When you have time, you can enjoy that. But there's another message of the wake. McLuhan called it the rear end view of the information environment. So rear end, R-E-A-R, that's the butthole. But rear can be spelled R-I-R-E, the verb for to laugh. So rear end or raucous laughter view of the end is another interpretation that McLuhan does.
But I had a question. Well, I find it interesting how today everyone has their own channel their own TV station. But yet, I mean, that's almost equal to the celebrities. But yet they're still so fascinated by the celebrity lifestyle and who the celebrities are. And
well, on a simple level, it's all about money. You worship the celebrities because they got the good life. They have access and time to do all they do, even though they do have a lot of problems behind the scenes, even in their careers. There's a lot of pressure just to stay in the game, to make the new scripts. So it's all about money, and if we got rid of money or somehow allowed everybody to not be subject to that kind of rent control, rent conditioning, that would make a different world. So you have the cynics and the conservatives say, that's the issue. Either we're going to have a new money system or we die. And then the socialists say, we got to have a new money system or we die. And they both are cynical about the other group, and they have a paucity or poverty of imagery. And just thinking in terms of chartered accountancy is missing all the exciting developments that happened in the final, well, this episode that it's not the last one, but getting into the final episodes. Did you watch that one last night? No, that was Jackie, what's her name? The woman from L.A., the black woman, Califia. See, did you get what I'm saying? The what was that last idea?
You were talking about a show?
What'd you say?
You were talking about a show.
Oh, did I fade out?
Yeah, you asked if I watched it last night or if we watched it last night.
Oh, yeah. What was the show? You don't know? I didn't say? Let's see. Are you guys forcing me to fall asleep? You guys are so quiet. Oh, here's Jean. She's probably been emailing, unmute me, unmute me. I wasn't at my desk there, Jean. Sorry.
Poverty of imagery, Bob. You were last talking about poverty of imagery, and related to the last show.
The poverty of imagery, of explanation. This is the problem. You know, every citizen should be aware of Finnegan's Wake, and understand how to read it to see how it relates to their lives. And let's see what some people now.
I want to read the Finnegan. I really want to read Finnegan's Wake, but I want someone to go over each page with me and tell me what I read.
Well, you don't have to do that. Online, they have the translations. But here's the thing. I'm not asking you to read Finnegan's Wake. You just get McLuhan's explanation of it and then think about that. What I spend my time, a lot of time, is thinking about what an amazing artifact it is and how it repeats, mirrors what's going on. So I think about it in relation to other things, not itself as itself. So,
and also, it's impossible to say the meaning forever of anything, like a piece of art or this text.
That means, I take that to mean you cannot verbalize in simple mono languages, images or mathematics or...
Yeah, or you cannot say this is what it means. That's
because you're limiting yourself to one medium when you say that. You're using only one medium
and,
to comment on a multimedia landscape.
And that's the amazing thing with engaging media. You get out, you squeeze.
I squeeze the lemon.
It depends on what you know and what you have experienced and your perception, your cognition. Every
that you project.
Yes, you cannot
We never do the commentary. Sometimes there's lots of good commentary that I don't watch, but there's a lot of activity. Let's look at some of these ideas.
Where in the chat room?
Yeah, in the chat room. ORA is publishing stuff, so I'm just going to go back a bit.
Yeah, I want to comment on the first. ORA just made a comment about Joseph Farrell.
Right, I know that name. Who's he? Is he an actor?
No, he's a New Age.
Oh, he's one of these conspiracy New Age guys. Yes, someone told me about him through his website, right?
Yes, but now read his most recent comment.
Yeah, here it is. Joseph Farrell noted that money analogically became the symbol of God in the sense that it was a formless substance which could then transmute into all other things. So currency would mimic the mystery environment. Yes, question mark. Now, this is that's what money was in the 19th century. McLuhan called it the LSD of media, and that was a pun on the symbol for the pound, LSD. You know, the way the English write it, it looks like the letters LSD, but it isn't. I don't think
but
it's
Bob,
those letters.
So let me take a shot at this.
But let me, okay, that's the 19th century. The 20th century is currency itself. Information and news is the money.
Yes.
Okay.
It's the information.
Go.
It's the information that's the money now. You and Roxy, I just... When I just woke up,
this would get into the wealth and health issue, Jean.
What?
This overlaps with your wealth and health theme.
That's what I was going to say. You guys were describing the new wealth, which is right. You can't even say it's at your fingertips. It's available to you everywhere.
Yes.
When you were talking about not being in Berlin or not being in, I'm not in Wisconsin. I'm anywhere
right.
I choose to be at any time.
Yeah.
And I produce and utilize anything I choose at any time. That's the new wealth. Currency is wrapped up in that image everybody's striving after, which is obsolete, the old.
Right. Like Joseph Farrell is talking obsolete.
Yes.
I go so far to say, if you don't understand Finney's, if you don't understand what I'm talking about, and I'm summarizing the greats, the fringe greats, then your commentary is just part of the wealth we call stupid wealth.
Yeah.
You know the wealth.
Yes, and another point is he is talking about wealth only as money, and wealth is what Marx said, capital, is services and all everything that produces more wealth is not only the money, but all the assets, people, for example, or machinery, technology.
Marx's term capital meant media environments.
Right. The medium, the whole environment of production.
Yeah.
And that's new value. That's the new value of that Marx described. It's not value in the product produced anymore. It's the value of producing the product.
Yeah, there's use value, exchange value, and symbolic value. You know, in Marx.
Right.
Now listen to this. Now, this will be the new part. So I'm reading Lyndon LaRouche's book of Marxist scholarship. He was a blatant Marxist scholar in the 60s and 70s. And he did a book called Dialectical Economics as Lynn Marcus. That was his front name when he was a socialist. And so I'm reading through this ancient book, and I'll give you examples. I renewed my acquaintance with the Marxist jargon, and that's where I was. So I noted what LaRouche says there's bad Marxist scholarship in the 1670s. Now, the Marxists don't know what they're doing anymore. Mm-hmm. So he had to redefine what Marx really said. So I'm going through it. And I'm making notes. I have here, I think I've noted about 50 pages. And this is one theme, Marshall McLuhan. There's 50 McLuhan statements by LaRouche.
Really?
Not using McLuhan, but saying McLuhan ideas as he translates Marx. So I'll read you a couple of these.
Wow.
My chart is more in, I mean, I kind of knew this years ago, but I haven't been reading LaRouche in a long time. So I'm gone back, and I remember saying that, you know, the guys on the tiny note chart are satellite conductors, quadriphenic media analysts, each from a different bias. So of the world of dialectics.
And may I say something? Marx did a very interesting analysis of the environment, but he could not see the importance of the electric environment in what he was talking
That's
about
right.
in the becoming of the
yes.
software communism or what developed later. He didn't saw that coming.
Right. He saw the hardware communism.
It feels so yeah. appropriate for his time now, looking from this new perspective.
No, you're just saying it feels so. What feels appropriate for his
Marx's,
time?
Marx's analysis.
Was right for his time, is what you're
Correct.
Saying, not our time.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Yes, and I think in the 50s, 60s, many people will not even read Marx because they thought he was an atheist and he didn't believe in God and all these things. But now that people are more relaxed on those issues, many young people are going back to Marxist
yeah.
ideas and ideals.
Yes, okay, so Bob and Roxy, we can now put the perspective of Marx in his time and be pretty impressed. How do we
with him, yeah, and that's why the LaRouche book, LaRouche is very impressed with Marx, and he's pointing out how everybody screwed up and correctly interpreting him, but LaRouche doesn't know it, but he's applying a McLuhan kind of analysis, interpretation
yes.
of Marx.
And that's what you guys are doing. You're applying the McLuhan, well, actually the Bob Dobbs type of analysis toward
to the present,
new wealth.
To the present. We're not you know, reinvigorating Marx. And LaRouche,
so
LaRouche
is
doing
way,
this 40
Bob,
years
is
ago.
Is there a way to get it across to people before that time? Do we have to wait all that time like Marx did for it to become impressive to more people?
Well, people are subject to original sin, which is, McLuhan defined, the denial of the present, and they live in the past. And societies have always done that, so why should we expect differently? Well, Ion is telling us that non-physics is not putting up with this habitual pattern anymore.
Hello.
That's the new news. Finally, some intervention is happening. The gods have arrived to clean it up.
And to knock that shit off.
Yeah. Let me see. Okay, I've got different markings. Okay, here's a sentence. LaRouche says, It is necessary merely to transcend the metaphysical dualism of reductionism to recognize that social and mental phenomena are in themselves material phenomena of the most primary sort. The anguished search for a material basis for consciousness is mere pathology on the part of the searcher. If he means by that, we must wait upon experimental verification of hypotheses about physiology or microphysics per se before we can understand the objective basis of mentation. Then it goes to another. I'm just going to read the McLuhan levels that I've marked off.
Bob, that's the pilot program. Government always has to have a pilot program to see if it works before they implement it.
Right. But in the gross huffing and puffing of the steam engine. Forget that. The next sentence. The emergence of the need for thermodynamics, starting with steam, resurrecting the issue of light, and accelerated by the issues of magnetism and electric phenomena, confronted mathematics with the most devastating problems involving discreteness and continuity, and compelled it to develop a new conception of function if it was to be of much practical account in the real world. This intrusion from the domain of general socialized practice had two results, according to the mathematician Klein. In one direction, the effort to isolate the internal antinomies of mathematics was brought to fruition by the work of Riemann, Cantor, and Klein himself, such that prevailing notions of geometry and number were absolutely revolutionized. Within a half century, the practical outcome of this accomplishment was manifest in the work of Maxwell, Planck, and Einstein, the latter's most notable accomplishments being a direct reflection of Riemann's work. This phenomenon exemplifies the second development Klein noted, the proliferation of science's specific powers for general socialized practice. So I'm reading these 19th century sentences. These are like the background to get the blatant McLuhanisms. So then LaRouche says, what then is fundamental to scientific knowledge? Or in other words, On what original premises are scientific revolutions founded, and to what authority does science appeal for vindication of its reply to such challenges? What but the confrontation of crisis and scientific comprehension of socialized practice? Science is an abstraction of socialized practice. He's always talking about socialized practice. That's media, the relations between people in society and the practices that are imposed on people by the new media. So science is an abstraction of socialized practice. It is socialized practice as a universalizing basis, which is the fundamental, the actually pure basis of real scientific progress or technology. The question is not whether our judgments find approval within ordinary reduction to scientific practice, but how we may most efficiently bring the development of those branches of knowledge up to the level of the fundamental breakthrough in the conception of socialized practice. See the emphasis on socialized practice.
This is wonderful. I really like this.
Method is just the standard rules of.
Did Roxy say this is wonderful?
Yes.
Yeah, Roxy, this is her Marxism. She can now admit she's a Marxist. Like I said, she was a communist.
I've always been there. No, but I think many people are not only a Marxist or a socialist. It's like I think most of us have had phases like in which you were more conservative or more this or more that. And it's not like everybody's forever communist or forever right wing.
No, but Roxy, it feels like you and I are the only two in the world that get excited about talking about Marx.
No, here in Berlin, there's a lot of people going back to Marx and groups of people reading The Capital. And,
cool.
They're doing McLuhanism and they don't know it.
The biggest demo ever in Berlin. And it was against all these new treaties of free commerce. There was never a biggest demonstration as yesterday of people against free commerce.
You mean the refugees and that?
No, the treaties of free commerce that are supposed to be implemented.
Oh, this soon. Is what the Europe bankers and governments are doing. Free commerce is what they call
TTIP or something like that. It's called. It's
right. So you're saying this is against the latest.
Yes. What? Yesterday was like the some type of transatlantic treaties of commerce.
Right, and it's the biggest demonstration in the history of Berlin or Germany?
Yes. Yes, it was really impressive. You could see from the Brandenburger Gate all under Den Linden
right.
and the avenue that goes to the Angel.
Yes.
All that axis was full with people, but really impressive. I've never seen that.
Did you go to it?
Well, I was around there,
yeah.
It was there.
Did you see images on YouTube or something? You look at it on your computer?
Well, there is a lot of people posting that also on Facebook, for example.
Right. So this is it's becoming like the Mexico demonstrations.
Yes, and there is like a retrieval of Marx ideas and people trying to understand what's going on the with the economy. Like
right,
how come everything everything was so good and all of a sudden everywhere is crisis and so they're going back to study Marx.
Well,
Carlos is talking about Marx is something I never heard about how he's.
Who you say? Who's talking about? Are you talking about what I'm reading? Yeah, LaRouche.
Yeah.
LaRouche. Now, here's the thing. They're falling back on the 19th century idea that, money and capitalism is causing this problem. That's not true. It's the new environments that are making the old capitalist media of money and counting not work. So it's really tricky that if you don't define it right, you just end up having another civil war, and then the police state comes in, you know? So you got to criticize it better. So listen to this. So I started reading the book and getting his jargon down. Then I started to see, okay, when he says socialized practice, I mean medium by that. So then I started to be able to project McLuhan in there as I worked through the book. So look at this. Lewis says, to get into the mind of ancient men, he must first become ancient man for a moment, which he can accomplish in approximation by setting himself, his problems of existing as ancient man, within the technology, the material mode of social reproduction of ancient society. That's what you do with McLuhan. You find out what technology the ancient man had, and you figure out the conditioning the technology had. You get this? To get into the mind of ancient man, you have to get into the technology, the material mode of social reproduction of ancient society. It's pretty blatant, eh?
Great. That's great. You, Bob, are completing, by extending McLuhan, you are creating the pure communist state that Marx was trying to get to.
Right.
So the participatory democracy.
Good yeah, there's the participatory democracy, and then McLuhan advocated an anticipatory democracy through knowing the tetrad. You anticipate what's going to happen, not react with a software communist bias of demanding complete participation by everybody, and you would get that by having a guaranteed income.
Yes, this is the art of being unruled when everybody's in the power. How can you have government?
Did you just say unruled? Did you just say unruled?
Unruled, yeah.
Yeah, that's
unruled,
good.
Because you cannot have government.
Yeah, you can't have government. So now we have to have the art of being unruled. How do you create a fake ruling or cooperation? No, that's good.
Okay, wait.
The art of being unruled.
Anticipatory democracy would come about through guaranteed income. Is that what you said?
No, participatory democracy, where everybody gets to share and everybody's considered an equal contributor, then everybody would be given a basic stipend so they didn't have to have a job.
That was related to anticipatory.
No, anticipatory democracy is McLuhan in charge is what he meant. And his computer models would show why people are thinking different ways, why there's a big – when McLuhan saw there was a big protest in Berlin with millions of people, he wouldn't say, oh, the capitalists are in trouble, or I'm going to join the anarchists or join them. He'd say, what in the media dynamics is making people coalesce like a fad at this moment? He'd look for the causes of it and say that's what's more important to understand.
Okay, well, would it be – do you think that this concept that we're always looking back, we can only define what's in the past and we can't anticipate our future, would you see, was LaRouche maybe alluding to, if we were relieved of our financial woes, our financial insecurities, we may be better positioned to anticipate
To handle the real changes that are coming anyways, that are not met with political solutions.
Yes.
McLuhan said the new thing is not nationalist reform or international reform, but we need to develop a psychic ecology, a protection through psychic
understanding. Wow. Economic ESP.
I like when Roxy gets all excited with her it wasn't a waste of time studying all that Marxism, Roxy. We'll bring it back. We'll make it.
No, Roxy, you did it just for me.
So let me read you some of these more things where I project McLuhan and LaRouche. So LaRouche says, such societies could not possibly understand themselves. That's exactly what McLuhan says. Nobody could understand. It was too slow. Nobody knew what was molding them, right? It was too slow. So he says, such societies cannot possibly understand themselves or be understood generally, except in respect to that movement within them which leads toward capitalist development. So he's talking about the inevitable phase of capitalist development and how it's going to flip into, he says, a socialist situation. And that talk about socialism would go nowhere today because that's a retired thing unless you got the college kids trying to retrieve it. But what LaRouche means by socialized development is the global village and the global theater. That's when he explains it. He said, this tendency, which must be inevitable and unavoidable in any attempt to understand the past from the present, becomes an error only when capitalism is mistaken for completed perfection. This error would cause one to look at ancient societies, for example, for their specifically capitalist qualities. The only remedy for this error is to examine the past from the standpoint of the fundamental contradictions of capitalist development and to locate in the invariant features of historical development, thus adduce the principle which must be applied. Then he says, then he gets into Get Into the Mind of Ancient Man. I read that. And then you go to, we must first locate the transformation in objective technology, which most fundamentally distinguishes one basic mode of production from its predecessor and supersessor.
Will you reread that one?
Yeah. I'll read a few sentences before that. Marx's approach, as defined in these and other locations, is the tactic we employ in this text to enable ourselves to trace most directly the transition of a society from its predecessor to its supersessor. We must then concentrate first on what we conditionally termed objective in Chapter 2. So what's objective? We must first locate the transformations in objective technology, which most fundamentally distinguishes one basic mode of production from its predecessor and supersessor. He's saying, look at the medium to determine what was going on in each century.
This is what you've been doing. To understand what's going on, you have to do media and ecology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can hear me doing it in 30 years ago on CKLN. I would just use code words for capital technological phases. So then he says, in the succeeding three chapters, 9 through 11, we define and integrate the credit and monetary form of the process of circulation, elaborating the determination of exchange value, and in the final chapter, we sum up their interconnection as a process to be comprehended as invariant with respect to these two interpenetrating processes of determination. Now, that's another bunch of words, meaning look at the technical situation we're in now. So I'm gathering together all the different jargonistic phrase clusters that says the same point. So I've read half the book, and it's real easy to read now.